ask four questions. Thank you. Bring up four issues and attempt to solve them with one episode, and get something very meaningful, hopefully, out of it in terms of the experience of the mitzvah, Shmias Koshuv. So, I'm going to first develop these four. It's going to take much longer to develop the four issues, the four problems, than to solve them. But, hopefully, we will be in sync with this. First one goes back, it's interesting. I was open to be in the very, very first year of Yonason Sachs gave. Everyone heard of Yonason Sachs, Rosh Yeshiva and Landers. So before he was that, before he was Rosh Yeshiva and YU, who's Mishpacha?
No, he was on the cover of Mishpacha magazine.
Yes, he was, yes. Before he was on the cover of Mishpacha. Before he was Rosh Yeshiva NYU, before he was giving shiur in MTA, the very first shiur he ever gave was in a different place. It's an interesting story to talk about one day, but there was a big hack at the time he did this, but he gave shiur in a different college, not YU. Very controversial. And I was lucky enough to have it happen. And he's been my Rebbe ever since that time. And I remember the very, very first shiur he gave. And by the way, the way he gives shiur now is exactly, then he was like 24, something like that age. A little older than you guys. No difference. There's no difference whatsoever in terms of his Yedias HaKol and his organization. He blew us away. So I remember the very first shiur in Yonah D'Yoma, he used to obviously like try to give shiurim that related to whatever was going on. So he gave a shiur on this topic of Tkiyas HaShofar, and he brought up the following. He said that there's a very famous, and he was a Talmud then of Rav Soloveitchik. This is going back, I'm dating myself a little, but he was very much a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, and he used to quote the Chidush of Rav Soloveitchik all the time. Including this, one of the most famous chakiras of Rav Soloveitchik that he used very often was this idea, of typologies. Everyone know what typologies are? Dichotomies, typologies. That means he's constantly evaluating things in terms of these dichotomies. And one of the most famous ones was mitzvos. He separated mitzvos into two types, two categories. The majority of mitzvos are mitzvos where the asiyas, the pu'ulas ha-mitzvah, and the kiyum mitzvah go hand in hand. Right, so you guys right now are learning the perfect example. What's that? Dalaminim, right? Dalaminim, mida agibe nafikbe, right? As soon as you pick it up, that's the maisa mitzvah, picking it up. Rekichas dalaminim. And when's the kiyum? Same time. As soon as you pick it up, there's the kiyum mitzvah. Most mitzvahs operate that way. Most mitzvahs are the maisa mitzvah and the kiyum happen simultaneously. There are, the Rav loves to stress, certain very particular mitzvahs where that's not true, where there's the Maisa mitzvah, and very separate and distinct is the Kiyama mitzvah, and just doing the Maisa mitzvah does not in any way guarantee that you can do the Kiyama mitzvah. For example, classic example, anyone?
Tefillah.
What? Tefillah is a good one. What's the Maisa mitzvah is either davening, or if you're into Hasidus, flopping or flipping, whatever they do. And the Kiyam is something else. Kiyam is the idea that you're omed b'fnei ha'makom. That's a very big, great example. What's a more classic example? Hold that one for a second. We'd have to discuss how we define the mice and mitzvah puravu, but it's an interesting thought. Yeah, that might be the one where there's a delay. Or it could be that the kiyum is right in that mice. So, but and then you've got to be satisfied. Right? But putting that aside, the classic one is Simchas Yomtov. Simchas Yomtov is always the example the Rav used to give. Right? What are the pu'ulos, what are the mice and mitzvah of Simchas Yomtov? Right, Bas V'yayin, and then the Rambam, and all those things. Get something nice for your wife, get something nice for your kids. Right, all that's the Maisa mitzvah. What's the Kiyum mitzvah? It's a Kiyum Shemalei. It's a Simcha. You have to feel Simcha. If you do all that stuff, and no one feels any Simcha, no mitzvah. And then, Rachman Otzai, at the other extreme, Avelus. Avelus is the same thing. It's a Kiyum Shemalei. Avelus means, L'aleinu, that there may be Hugei Avelus, Yeshiva Gavir Karka, and after wear shoes, to have Atifa, according to some people, and many other Nihugi Avelos. But none of that means a thing without the Kiyum Shevalev. What's the Kiyum Shevalev? What's the agenda with Nihugi Avelos Lalena? Is to get the feeling of the loss, to experience the loss, to really have an intellectual, emotional, psychological experience of the loss. Okay? So that was the background that Rabbi Sacks gave to the following Shaya. Yes. You know, it says in Parshas Pinchas, when it talks about the mitzvah of Tekiyah Shofar, or Shmias Kol Shofar, that itself is a machlokas, right? Being very famous talking around that. How is it presented in the Torah in Pinchas? Anyone? Balkara? Yom Chuyah. And what about in Amor? Zichrach. Right? Very nice. So, Sphira. So, Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, what might this explain? What might this express? What's the easiest way? Why does it say one place Zichron Shua and the other place Yom Shua Stam? Why is it, what's the Zichron about? No, it's all in Rosh Hashanah. Shabbos, that's exactly what the Gemara gets into, but why is that going to be absolutely not correct? Because it's only in Derabanan. It's not a Darius, so there's no sense that. And then the Gemara goes on to discuss the Inyan of Shabbos in the Mikdash and in based in and a whole discussion over the Tzchaftes on the days of Rosh Hashanah. What does Gemara never do? Ever? Explain. So new what? If that's not it, so what is the explanation of Zichron Shur? So comes along the Rav, and the Rav said, it's exactly my Yisod. Which means what? Guess what Shofar is? It's another one of those exceptional mitzvos where the Kiyum and the Asiya are separate. You're not becoming the mitzvah by blowing the Shofar. You're not becoming the mitzvah by hearing it. That's just the pe'ulas mitzvah. To be yotze, the kiyum mitzvah of shofar requires the zichron. What is that talking about? So this is where Rav Sacks and the Rav, quoting the Rav, you need to have a emotional, psychological, intellectual experience of the message of the shofar. Otherwise, there's no kiyum shofar. So that great lumdus, right? And they use this to explain a whole bunch of other things. The shiur was amazing. I'd love to go through that whole shiur. It's full of great lumdus. He said, why is there a seer in the Rambam? The Rambam says by matzah, mitzvos, ain't sriches kavan. When it comes to shofar, mitzvos sriches kavan. What does he hold? You either hold one or the other. You either hold mitzvos sriches kavan or mitzvos ain't sriches kavan. How do we explain the seer in the Rambam? Same yisod. He says, well, shofar is one of these mitzvahs where the kiyum, like tefillah, just like tefillah, because it's the same word by tefillah, is a kiyum shemalev. There's no kiyum without kavan. So even though he holds normally, when you have an asiyas on mitzvah as the kiyum, lo tzrichas kavan, the mice is enough. You don't need any special kavan. It'll speak for itself in its action. But when they're distinct and you need a kiyum shemalev, then you absolutely need kavan. Right? So, great lumbus. And everything was great, but it bothered me, this is an old problem for me, back then, what did I never get to hear from Rabbi Sacks, or even quoting the Rav? So, now that I just told you this great yisod, that you're going to not be yote, you're not yote in the midst of shofar, comes Rosh Hashanah, unless you do the kiyum shebalev, so, what are you going to do? What on earth is it? That's what was missing. Sometimes, in the Chas V'Shalom, I don't ever say anything negative about my Rebbe, about my son. But I remember I used to bother him like this every now and then. What's the meaning? What does it mean? So what is, the lumbus is great, but what exactly is this kiyum? What am I thinking? What am I experiencing when I hear the kiyum shalom? So why would Rabbi Sacks have looked at me like, get away from it, he didn't do that. But why would he have looked at me like, what kind of klutz kasha is that? Of course, everybody knows. What is it? What are the famous explanations for the shofar? What do you get? Right. So everybody quotes that one, right? Everyone knows. The Rambam is the one who's made it famous in Hilchos Tshuva. Oh, Yishen Yishen Aschem. Oh, he said repeats it. Right. Yishen Yishen Aschem. Right. That's classic. Right. Okay. Good. What's the other famous gaon who gave you all 10 reasons what to think about for the Kiyum Shofar, what it means of Saji, right? This is how Abudraham brings the sound, along with the Art School Siddur brings the sound, right? If you look in the Art School, right before you get to the Kiyum Shofar, it gives you all 10 But Saji has all 10. Anyone know what they are? So one of them is like, Ori Yishen Mishanaskan, it's an Azhara, that this is the first day of the service in Yeshuva, it's Mamad Har Sinai, it's Mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Melech Kol HaOlam, because it's the Bria was on Rosh Hashanah, and it's Mashiach, Tchias HaMesim, it's Kibbutz Golios, right, and on and on and on. I give you all 10. What do they all have in common? They all have in common that the idea is that, and the same idea that the Rambam is telling you with Ori Yishen Mishanaskan, is it's like a wake-up call. That's what the shofar is, right? That's the experience, right? That's what it is. So, no good. I was totally disappointed in that answer. That is not adequate. For two reasons. A balabatish one. I'll start with a balabatish one. It's my personal problem with that answer. What's a wake-up call? So, when you hear the shofar, what are you hearing? Kia, Shura, Kia. Right? That's what it is. So what part of that is like a wake-up, like a blast? Kia. The Kia is like that. What about the Chua? The Chua is not like that. The Chua, so this is the Baal Batish one. I didn't think he liked it. But this is what I was thinking back when I was, about your age. I was thinking, I don't know. The Chua must be teaching. There must be some other expression the Chua is giving. It can't just be, Ori Yishen Mishanaskan. That's like Tkiyah, right? And really, the true is the main thing, right? The tkiyos are accompanying it. The true is the main thing. It's the ikar. Those are like sort of tafel to it. But to be, you guys aren't satisfied with like this kind of balabatish kind of fluffy stuff. What about the way, this is the way Rav Ashari Eli, Rabbeinu, Morenu, the way he would always say it is like this. He'd always ask a kashrut and say, what's the pashtus? If you look at the Gemara, what's the pashtus on what a trua is and what a trua is about? There's actually a Gemara that discusses it. It's Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. And the Gemara says exactly what a trua is. What is it? Yom Trua Yelachem, what's the Targum? Yom Yebava Yelachem. Yom Yebava. What's a Yom Yebava? Right, we'll get to that in a second, because that's going to be another kasha, right? The Gemara says, Yom Yevava Yelachon. That's what Yom Chua means. What is Yevava? So the Gemara concludes, it means crying. Either Gunuchi Ganach, or Yevava Yelachon. It's either a moaning, groaning kind of cry, or it's a whimpering kind of cry, but it's a cry. That's not like a wake up. It's a cry. So I didn't think my Alabatish question was so stupid anymore. I was embarrassed to ask it, which is a lesson. You should never be embarrassed to ask a kasha. I thought it was a good question. I said, that was the true about wake up. It doesn't sound like it to me. It doesn't feel like it. And then when I saw this Gemara, I said, that's clearly not the emphasis. The emphasis here is on something else. The true is about crying. So I have to be thinking something else. So my first kasha of the four is now over here. What is really the true about? What is this crying? What does the crying mean to me? Why is the crying of significance? What does it have to do with Rosh Hashanah? What's all the crying? The second kasha is the way the Gemara derives this crying business. How did it get from Yom Yevava Yelachem to it's Genun and Ganach and Yilu Yalu, that it's crying? Through Eim Sisra, that's what it said, because the word Teyavev appears by Eim Sisra, right? It says, by Eim Sisra, it says, Ad HaChalon Nishkafa, right? Vateyavev Eim Sisra. So she looked out the window, she peered out the window, and she started, the Gemara learns it, it's not really Pashup Shai in Tanakh, if you look at the Mefarshei Tanakh, but the Gemara is treating it and she cried, right? So, why are we learning such an important yisod, what a trua is, from one of the greatest Rishayim that ever lived? She was a horrible person. Ein Sisra, what was she saying? She was saying like this. She was saying, oh, where is he? Maybe he's looting and raping and doing all these horrible things. Oh, what a beautiful person to teach me what a true is. And not only does she teach me what pshat and true is, but I also learned from her the halacha of Mea Kolos. Mea Kolos is totally based on Ein Sisra as well. So that's my second kasha. The second kasha is, why is the foundation of the entire mitzvah of trua coming from such a horrible person? Ein Sisra. Question number three also relates to this. The fact that it's all about crying and Yom Trua is Yom Yevava and is a crying is very, very nice. If it's in beautifully with the Ari, right, the Ber Hetev in Taf Kuf Pei Dalet, who's the Simon who's talking about Rosh Hashanah, so the Ber Hetev brings down the Ari. The Ari said he was Noeg every year, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, he absolutely had to cry. And then, he didn't just have to cry, but he said, anyone who does not cry on Rosh Hashanah, if you don't cry, you lack shlemus. There's something wrong with your neshama. There's something wrong with you. Okay, so that's very fitting. Yom Tshuva, Yom Yavava, it's a day of crying. It makes sense. What's the problem? The big problem is the Vilna Gaon. In the Sefer Maaseh Rav, everyone knows what that Sefer is, that Sefer with all the Nihugei and Halachos of the Gra. He says, Aser to cry on Rosh Hashanah. Aser to cry on Rosh Hashanah. Whoa, what does that mean? The whole thrust of the Gemara, understanding of Yom Tshuva, is a day of crying. The Ari says, if you don't cry, you lack shlemos. Your neshama is broken. There's something wrong with you. And the Gra tells me it's aser to cry on Rosh Hashanah. The Chas v'Chalila, the Gra's neshama, was lacking shlemos. Is that what we're going to conclude? Obviously not. So question number three is, what's with the Gra? Question number four, final question. Right? And this one is going to seem like it doesn't relate, but you'll see, hopefully, that it does very much. So, we were zochet to marry off a son this summer. Thank you very much. And he had us, this was like sort of a hybrid American-Israeli chasna. So like, I don't know if you guys have been to Israeli chasnas yet, right? You know what it's like? It's, a little hefkeris. Yes, and like there's no processions and walking down and picking the music you're going to walk down to. But we kind of like, we'll blame on the other side. The other side insisted that we do it in American. No, we were into that too. Right? American wedding, we were having a procession, we were walking down. And my son, carefully with his collar, were picking out the songs and all that stuff. You should be Zohar bin Hiram Yamein or his mother. So what does he pick? He picks this song, a beautiful pasuk from Shir HaShirim. Right? It's also been made famous by Simcha Leiner. Simcha Leiner song, right? Everyone know what I'm talking about? Ani Yishena Avalibi Er Kodo Di Dofek Pisri Li, right? I only know it by heart because I love the song Simcha Leiner. Achosi, Rayasi, Yonasi, Tamasi. Beautiful song. Really is. I should play it, but I have to get on. So he picks that as our thing. We walk down to it, and I say to him, his name is Michael. I go, Michael, wow, you know. Can I ask you why you picked this particular song? Why'd you pick this song? I said, well, what are the words? Well, it says, it's a, I'm sleeping, but my heart is awake. And I hear the knock of my beloved. Open up your heart to me, my beloved. My sister, you know, in quotation marks. My beloved, open up your heart. So I said to him, I said, could it be that there's any romantic connotation? Is that why, you know, that's why it has a fitting setting in this chasana? And then before he was about to answer me, because I think he was about to say yes, I said, it couldn't be that, right? Because you know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Aleph says, anybody who takes, who's kore possibly shir shirin, the ose osa zemer, maybe ra la olam. It's like one of the worst things you could do is take a puzzle from Shir HaShirim and make it into a romantic thing. So he decided to not say whatever he was going to say. And he said, okay, Abba, so what is the reason I picked that song? What's the real reason? So that became a drush I gave at the home. I said, I had to justify this. What on earth are we doing? We have a zemer here that should be maybe ra la olam. What's it doing at the chas? So developed the following idea. I obviously won't go into the whole thing. I'm going to just be very brief. You know, it goes to the whole machlokis over whether Shir HaShirim should be included in Tanakh, right? That's in the Mishnayos in Yadayim, I think in the third parak. There's a whole machlokis in whether Shir HaShirim should have been in Tanakh or not. And one says, yes, you know, is it Matana Yadayim or not? That's how it gets into Yadayim, right? Because if it's in Tanakh, it's Matana Yadayim, whatever. So there's a little bit of it. Looks like there's going to be a whole discussion, a whole machlokas. Somebody, Rabbi Akiva, jumps in. And Rabbi Akiva says, there's no machlokas. Stop. The Chuli Alma, Shir HaShirim, is absolutely the perfect thing to be in Tanakh. It's the greatest thing in the world. Everything else is Kodesh, Shir HaShirim, Kodesh Kodash. It's in. So a lot of contemporary writers ask the kasha, like, how does Rabbi Akiva know this? What is he so sure of? So, a nice answer of Moshe Avigdor Amiya, who's one of the Israeli Rosh Hashanah, right? beautiful answer. He says, well, this is Rabbi Akiva l'shitasa. We know Rabbi Akiva, right? Anyone learn Makos? Everybody does a Siyum Makos, right? So what's the last stuff, right? Famous story of Rabbi Akiva, right? The Shu'al, and he's happy, right? And everyone else is like, oh my God, and he's happy because he's the ultimate optimist. That's what Rav Amiel says. He says, Rabbi Akiva l'shitasa, he's the optimist. Everything positive, positive, positive. And he knew that Shir Shirim is the most positive expression of Dveikus between Klal Yisrael and Kodesh Baruch Hu. So this is him, the Shitaso. He says, that's what Shir Shirim writes. It is an ultimate in optimism, just like Rabbi Akiva was. And no one's going to mess up with this. And it's good to go. And it's perfect for a chasana. Why is it perfect for a chasana? So the reason it's perfect for a chasana is because here we have the chasana and the kal, and they're starting their new life. And it's going to be so wonderful and optimistic. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin that said, you're not allowed to make a zemer out of a pasuk with Shir Shirim, it says, shelo bizmano. But if it's bizman that's appropriate, right, and Rashi gives an example, like you're going to say something, a Dvar Torah on using it, or you're going to do something like that. So here, in the setting of the chasana, it becomes, according to the pshat of Rav Amiel, perfect, perfect. So what's my kasha? Right? So Rabbi Akiva is this ultimate optimist of Klal Yisrael. Shir Shirim is the ultimate optimist sefer, positive, positive, positive. So why, very famous Chazal describes, anyone here see Shir Shirim Friday night? Is everyone aware that there's a minhag like that? All right, let me tell you, there's a minhag. Many people do. They say Shir Shirim Friday night. Why? Where did it come from? It came from the Zohar, that Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva used to every Friday night, read Shir Shirim, and his Talmidim, the Gemara describes, right, found him crying his head out when he was doing this. So are you allowed to cry on Shabbos? No. You're not allowed to cry on Shabbos. The Chathila, we'll talk about it in a second. So they said, Rabbi Akiva, Rebbe, what are you doing crying on Shabbos? He said, no. It's different. But I thought, he's the ultimate optimist, reading the ultimate optimistic sefer. Why is it making him cry? Question number four. Why is he crying? He's the most positive guy in the world. He could laugh at Shualim on Har HaBayis. He could understand Shir Shirim to be the perfect sefer that'll never cause any trouble. It can only bring positive sentiments. So why is he crying when he's reading it? That's the fourth kasha. So there are four kashas, right? Let me just repeat them quickly so we can wrap them all up, right? First kasha was, well, so what's the shua really all about? This shua of crying, it can't just be Oru Yishenim Mishenaschem. It's not a wake up. That's the kia. The kia might make me think about a wake up, you know, stark noise, a loud noise that get me out of my slumber, right? But the true is doing something else. And the Pashas and Gemara is that it's doing something else. It's doing something to do with crime. Question number two, why am I learning the Yisod of Trua, such an important thing, if I name Sisra? Question number three is, what was with the Gra? The Gra said, it's Asr to cry in Rosh Hashanah. Everything else tells me it's a mitzvah, it's a chiv. If I want to have shlemos, if I want to be a good, normal person, I have to cry in Rosh Hashanah. What's with the Gra? And question number four is the ultimate optimist. Why is he reading the ultimate optimistic, positive sefer and crying? So what's the answer? The answer, obviously, our chakira has to be is, what's crying? What does it mean to cry? What are we getting at with crying? So the answer is found, I think, in an amazing tops. This is in Siman Resh Peches. It's a sefer in Shulchan Aruch that discusses the mitzvah of owning Shabbos. Right? Mitzvah of owning Shabbos. What's the mitzvah of owning Shabbos? Anybody?
Anything?
That does what? What's your agenda? What are you trying to do with oneg? Is it a achila mitzvah? No. I mean, there's a mitzvah of kfor Shabbos and a mitzvah of oneg Shabbos, right? Oneg, but how do I perform it? How do I accomplish oneg Shabbos? So we all know, like, we have sudos, shena b'Shabbos tanu, sleeping, you know, ona could be a kiyum of this. What's the common denominator of all these things? What is owning Shabbos really all about? Satiety, satiation, feeling satisfied, not feeling wanting, any physical wantingness. That's the opposite of owning. Owning means I feel satisfied. Usually, for us normal guys, it means eating, right? We don't want to be hungry. Aser lisanos b'Shabbos, right? Achar chatzos. Why? Because you can't have that feeling of need. Right, maybe it's made if we want to get fluffy, right? If you were like, if I was, this was Michalat.
All right, I'm sorry what I was going to say. I was getting in trouble with my wife when I made comments like that. I'm saying, like, you know, whatever. So, owning is about satiety. Let's just go on. Okay, great. So, you're not allowed to grow. Let's say I, Rahmanul Itzlan, am a person who, when I eat, it hurts. It's painful. So then, oneg, the Machaber writes, would be not to eat. You'd be mekayim the mitzvah of oneg by not eating. And then the Ramah takes it one step further. And the Ramah says the following. He says, and by the way, if you got oneg from crying, if you did a bachiya shel tanug, mutter on Shabbos. Mutter in a mitzvah. If you got oneg from crying. What does that mean? Suggestions?
Crying out of happiness.
What?
Crying out of happiness.
So crying out of happiness. Alright, we'll get back to it. What else can you do?
For crying to recover as like a therapy.
Yeah, good. As a release. Right? That's what the Ramah says. The Ramah says what you're saying. The Ramah says what he means is you're getting tanug, why? Lahotzi is a tzar milibo. That's the exact words he uses. It's a catharsis. A cathexis is a psychological term. It means, you know, I have this built up pain and it's a release. So, wow, that's pretty good. You were just describing to the Taz. You just hit the Taz right on the head. So the Taz says, that can't be pshat for exactly the reason you said. That's not very, very impressive. The Taz says, by the way, the Mishnah Berurah accepts this Ramah, and he mentions a whole bunch of Achronim that are happy with it. The Eliyahu Rabbah gives a different answer to your Kashi. He says, well, not everybody gets a release. Some people do, some people don't. If you do, the Ramah is telling you, if you get a release, mutter. If you don't, if it makes you more upset, crying, then it's awesome, right? But the Taz doesn't like it. Taz likes your kasha better than that answer. And the Taz says, that's not it, because then it would never be usher to cry in Shabbos. Right? Everybody could cry, because I want a release. So the Taz says, that's not at all what it is. He says, it's something else. A bechiya shel tanug is, you know what it is? It's like the bechiya of Rabbi Akiva Friday night when he read Shirshi. That's what it is. So I'm saying to myself, well, this is great. And then I said to myself, well, I have no idea what he's talking about. What does it mean? I don't know why Rabbi Akiva's crying when he's reading the thing. I have no idea what that means. And so what does the Taz mean? Because I really want to know, because he's saying something extremely profound. And I thought about it, and I was getting a little closer. He gives a few hints. He throws in, it's like tefillah b'kavana, and he starts saying other things. And I was trying to intellectualize it, but I got to tell you the truth. I never understood it until the following event happened in my life. Sometimes the famous story of Shimon Bar Yochai coming out of the cave when he was like, you know, destroying the world every time he came out because he couldn't handle all the gashmius world. Everyone know what I'm talking about, you know? And then he sees the farmer, the Bavli says, he sees a farmer in Zachar Vishama. The Yerushalmi has a different whole story. He came out and he saw these people hunting birds. And every time a basco came out and said, Chayev, the bird was caught. And then if the basco said, Potter, the bird wasn't caught. And suddenly Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, wow, there's hashkacha in this world. Now I know there's hashkacha in this world. So everyone asks, what do you mean? He's one of the biggest Talmidei Chachamim in our history. He's in the cave for 14 years, reaching levels of unbelievable heights of chachma, and he doesn't know about hashkacha. He didn't know there's hashkacha. So the yesod is, no, sometimes you got to experience. You have to experience something to really internalize an idea. And that's what happened to me with this Taz. Because I really thought I understood the Taz. Something along the line of what you were saying with tears of happiness. You just got to understand, what is tears of happiness? What exactly is it? Right? And then I had the following event, and I'm going to tell you a quick story. It's an absolutely true story, and it's absolutely when I got shot in the Taz. I have this other life as a pediatric cardiologist. Some of you know about it, right? Back in America. And I had this couple come in with a 5-year-old son of theirs to see me, to get a second opinion. He had been through 2 horrendous surgeries. Horrendous. And it was tearing their family apart. They come in, this couple, right away, it was very striking, the difference between the husband and the wife. The wife is very appropriate. She's half the time crying, right? Now, they weren't Jewish, so no one sang Tehillim. Usually these scenes are with a lot of Tehillim. But in this one, she's not Jewish, so she's not saying Tehillim. But she was crying and very appropriate with her questions and trying to push me into an opinion that she wanted to hear. And the husband, from the beginning, I called him the rock, but not in a positive sense. He was a more like a machine. No emotion. He just sat there. He didn't say anything. He didn't show any sadness. He showed nothing. And we had our whole discussion, and I had to tell them I agree with the first opinion. We need a third surgeon. She starts crying hysterically, very appropriate. He's not moving. He's like this weird guy. Comes time for the surgery, and it's very difficult surgery. Things don't go perfectly well, unfortunately. And, you know, there's a lot of problems and complications, and the mother is very appropriate all over it, crying. And Mr. Lack of Emotion is not changing. He's always around, but with this weird affect of not caring, it seemed like. We finally limp out of the hospital after a couple of weeks of post-operative mess. And every other day, they're getting back into the emergency room. And it's another problem. The chest filling up with fluid. We've got to put a chest tube in. Oh, he has arrhythmia. We got to do cardioversion. All that stuff you see on TV or not, right? And it's horrible. And each time, the mother impresses me. She's on top of it. She's very, very hysterical all the time, but appropriately so. And Mr. Lack of Heart never changed. Never showed any emotion. Last week of this poor child's life, back in the hospital. Every night, cardiac arrest. Now, what a cardiac arrest is a horrible event. It means that near death, everybody comes running in. The family gets called into this room, prepare them, right? And night after night, we bring this child back, and I tell the parents, and the mother is beside herself, and Mr. No Emotions, still not a... He's not reacting. I'm really wondering if he needs psychological help. Seriously, I wanted to recommend it. I said something to the social worker. I said, you got to get involved. This guy is not normal. He's not reacting. He's not upset. He's not showing anything. Finally, the last night was the very last night when we did not bring the child back. And then the worst part of being a doctor ever is to have to go to a family and tell them that somebody didn't make it from their family. There's no such thing as acquiring the skill. You never get good at this. It's a very, very rough thing to do, but you have to do it. She must have read me from 30 feet away like a book. I must have, like, given it away. She starts getting, before I can get there to tell them, she gets hysterical. She comes running into the ICU screaming. I'm saying, oh my God, I have to tell this nutcase. I have to tell him. I go, he's going to finally lose it. I go to tell him. Nothing. Nothing at all. So I'm like thinking, I don't know how to assimilate what's going on here. I don't understand this person. So I leave. I leave, and I'm thinking, it's a horrible thing everybody just went through. That'll be something that will bother me for a very long time. And then 2 days later, I get a phone call. It's from the mother. She calls me up. She says, we're having a wake. Everyone know what a wake is? So, you know, a wake is, it's not a very comfortable thing for people that are used to it, like us. It's very different than a Leviathan, a Hagdil elephant for adults. In a wake, you have the body open, and it's out there, and they encourage you to pick up the body, all sorts of very, very unusual things from a Jewish perspective. So it's always like a big thing, you know, to go or not to go. And then if it's in a church, it's halachically really problematic. She asked me to go to the wake. So, you know, I had to say, well, where are you having it? And she said, it is. I said, okay, I'll go. I'll go. I'll pay my respects. And then she said, by the way, we want you to speak. Speak. I said, no, I'll come to pay my respects, but I'd rather not speak. She starts crying. I said, yes. I'll speak. Okay. God knows what I'm going to say, right? So it turns out there were three other speakers before me. First, number one, the priest. He goes first. Then there was a nurse, a neighbor, and me. So those first three speeches at this wake were all about the family. They were like saying, this family is unbelievable. They stood by this kid. They went through so much. And they were so caring, and they put in so much effort. And the whole place is crying except for one person, the father. Right? The father, the husband is sitting there. I'm watching him, and I'm saying, now? You're not even crying now. I want to go over to him and just shake him. What's wrong with you? And then it was my turn to speak. So I'm figuring, okay, when I told you before, the kiyum of Avelis, now we're talking about non-Jewish people in a way, still, you learn from the Torah how to behave. So the Torah is the ultimate chachma. So the Torah tells me that the objective is to make people appreciate the loss, appreciate the child in this case. So that's what I plan to do. I'm not going to just talk about the family the way everyone else did, but I was privy. I got to know these people pretty well. I knew about them when they went to Disney. I knew about their birthday party, the catch the father used to have with the son. I started talking about all those things and how much he appreciated it, the boy. 5 minutes into my speech, the father gets hysterical crazy, absolutely crying, loses it completely. He has to leave the room. So now I'm thinking, all right. Now this guy is like about 6 foot five, big, strong Italian guy. I'm dead. That's what I figured. This is it. I don't know what I did, but I triggered him. Here's this guy with all this pent-up emotion, and something I said just got him to just lose it completely. I said to myself, I'm getting out of here. I really did. I didn't know what this guy was going to do to me. So I'm going out, and then I feel two arms, right, clap, just grab me from behind, one here, and like a doll. Turns me around. Looks me in the face, and I'm saying, okay, Schweitzer, I don't know, Schweitzer. Doc, I love you. You do? I'm like, what? Why? And my voice must have been like a few octaves higher. I have no idea what's with this guy. He's psycho. What's he going to do next, right? What do you mean you love me? And then again, he shot in the past. How did he do that? He said like this. He said, you know, the whole time when my whole family was being torn apart, and my marriage was being torn apart, and my kid was suffering, unbelievable suffering, you want to know what I really wanted? I wanted it to be over. That's what I wanted. I could not cry when he died because I wasn't sad about it. It was a relief. It would have been checking, if you didn't use that word. It would have been phony. I was happy. But when you just reminded me of what he meant to me, and you hit inside my soul, that's the word he used, how I really felt about him, it made me cry the most enjoyable cry you could imagine. That's Bechir Shapanim. Bechir Shapanim is when your neshama hits a moment of absolute emes, absolute truth, that your neshama feels it in such a way that its only reaction is to cry. It's an emesic experience. It's something that's not every day. It's something that, why do we cry at a simcha like a wedding? Why was I crying my head off when my son got married? Because it was such a beautiful moment for me of joy that my soul felt it. Why is Rabbi Akiva crying when he reached Yer Hashirim? Because the Taz writes, "Hu mevin heichan dvarim magiin." He knows what it means. He understands the truth of Yer Hashirim and what it's talking about in the Dveikus Ruach HaKodesh. That's a different cry. That's not a cry of relief of tzar. That's a positive experience. It's the way many of the Baalei Kabbalah say it is the. The zeya of the neshama is bechiyah. The sweat of the neshama is these type of tears. So, now everything falls into place. Once you get this yisod, once you realize what a bechiyah shel tana really is, then you understand what a trua is, then you understand everything. Start with the Gra. Why did the Gra say it's asur to cry in Rosh Hashanah? So if you look in Harei Kedem, where they have this whole discussion, his Talmidim said he didn't think it was asur to cry in Rosh Hashanah. He thought it was absolutely asur to cry sheker on Rosh Hashanah. Who did he not like? These Chazanim, lo aleinu, who contrive tears as they daven. It's just a performance for them. They're not really crying out of some spontaneous realization of something, but they're crying to perform. That's sheker. That's the opposite of what should be happening on Rosh Hashanah. And what has to happen on Rosh Hashanah for real is a person has to have a moment of spontaneous crying, because they reach a moment of spontaneous realization of who they are, what they're about, what their goal should be. And that is it's a frightening experience. I want you to know, and I'll give you an example in a minute. But if you do it right, for better or worse, it's going to make you cry. If you are really woken up, let's say, by the tekiah, and then start to resolve and understand emes, it brings you to a bechir shel tanug. And therefore, if you don't do this, says the Ari, because he would certainly agree with the other half of that gra, then you lack shlemus. Then you're really missing it. And both, there's l'chul yam. Bechir shel tanug is a mitzvah. It's a chiv. It's a chiv. And that's what the Trua's message is, the Trua, the Genuch Yeganach, the Yule Yalu. It's all about reminding you that you need to be able to get to a point of emes in your self-assessment that brings you to tears. It's very fitting that we learn it from M. Sisra. Why? Because the one thing about M. Sisra's crying is that it was genuine. She was crying for her son. It was a mother crying for her son. That wasn't a contrived cry. That was an emesic cry that came from a point of absolute understanding and emes. Not a good one for her, but nevertheless, that's what it was. And therefore, it was not surprising that it brought her to tears, and that's exactly the yesod. The yesod is that we need to get to a bechir shel tanu, which is a bechir shel emes, in order to really fulfill the kiyum of the Ari of Rabbi Akiva, akin to Rabbi Akiva, what the Taz is talking about. That type of Bechiyah Shatanu is an absolute mitzvah. That was the yesod brought home by this guy. Now, it's not the way to do it, by having to go through what he went through, that's for sure. The truth is, when a person, you know, wants to, let's say, discover about themselves what this real truth is. It depends on the setting. I'll give you an example. I visited someone this summer who was unfortunately in jail. And I was shocked to see how many firm Jews were there. It really bothered me a lot. I went to visit him. And so for him, the emesic realization for him was to stop his rationalization. He kept excusing what he did. He got involved in something really wrong. Mamish stealing, but he had a rationalization. So for him, emes would be stop at the rationalization and recognize what you did. You did something wrong. That's posh. It gets more subtle to a guy sitting in yeshiva. What could it be for us? So one thing I was thinking, you know, the balance of the kiyas and ian, you should be doing a lot more ian. No, I'm just kidding. Couldn't help myself. No, the serious thing is, I'll tell you what I think about. So, am I being bolea my gaiva? In other words, how am I pacing myself in my learning? Am I just trying to keep up with other guys? Or, and this is small fry, we're going to get bigger and bigger. Am I just trying to keep up with other guys? Or am I doing what's best for me, for real? Emes, right? It seems like it's a pushy thing, but it's not for many, many guys. They just are trying to keep up. And it's a peer pressure thing, and they're sacrificing what's in their best interest. But that's small fry compared to other kind of cheshbonos a person has to make. I'm really learning a lot. I'm really doing great. I'm going to finish the first parrot. I'm going to finish this. I'm going to finish that. Oh, geschmack, it's great. Okay, good. What's your learning doing to you? Are you better over the Shem because of your learning? Are you a better Jew? A better person? Is it making you a better person? Because I think that's something you have to start to think about. I think that's the type of cheshbon a guy who's learning well in yeshiva should be making. Could be that you'll find surprises if you force yourself into this type of self-calculation. I know I did. I remember the moment when I thought I was really hitting it in yeshiva. And I said to myself, that shaila, I asked myself, so what kind of person am I now? Because what's the point of it all? What's the point of Torah? Just to acquire knowledge? It has to be that it's going to change you and make you into a better Jew and a better person. Is it happening to me? What do I think of chesed? Am I doing any? Oh, no, I don't have time for that. I'm learning. I'm going to be, you know, efshal yidei acherim. I'm going to use that rationale. Ooh, that's interesting. So are you being honest about that? Meaning, it's so chashed, you're learning. You have no time to do any chesed. These are the type of cheshbonos. They're very difficult, but they're the real ones. They're the real ones that can lead to a Bechir Shalemis. You'll know if you're Neshama HaShlemos. If you think, and I'm going to stop because I don't want to go through all the computations. It's really a very personal thing. Everybody's different. Everybody has to size up what they have to do. But the goal of the Trua, if you want to be Mekayim, Mekim Shevalev of Tia Shofar, Lefin Yisdaiti, is you have to be able to understand that it's telling you that you have a goal of a Bechir Shaltan. You have a goal to be able to hit a moment of self-assessment that's real and true. If you read the Rambam, this famous Rambam, everyone says, Oru, Oru, Yishenim, Yishenasim. If you read the whole Rambam, he writes more than just that. He writes, this Yisod, to me, retrospectively, is exactly what he's saying. He's saying, look deep into your neshama. Find out who you really are. Discover what you're really motivated by. Discover what you really want to do and accomplish. Then you'll be somebody who's a successful person who's woken up. And we should all be zocha that we should use the Trua and its message to find this moment of Bechir Shel Emes. It should be something that is a tremendous plus for us, and something that I think will assure us that we have Shlemos in our Neshamas.